Good morning. Judge Slater will be right out and we'll begin.
It looks like council is ready to proceed. The next matter we have is the Waterford Township Appellant, City of Northfield Respondent. You may both be seated. Thank you. A-18-2156 is our file number. And once council approached the podium, if you'd introduce yourself for our record, we appreciate that. And Appellant, council, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Michael Corey from the law firm of Corey and Rupee, representing the appellant Waterford Township. Your Honors, the main goal in interpreting a contract, and this is essentially a contract case involving an orderly annexation agreement, main goal of the courts, there really are two goals. One is to determine the intent of the parties, and once that intent has been determined, to enforce that intent. That's essentially what we do as a court going through this process. In this particular case, the city of Northfield has, in essence, conceded that the parties did, in fact, intend to enter into a perpetual contract, and that really is the main issue.
Is that really the main issue? I think that's one of your arguments, but I don't think that's the main issue. And in terms of that issue, you cite to one particular portion of a statement by a respondent, without looking at the full context of what's being stated. But really, isn't the issue here just of what the agreement between the parties mean?
Your Honor, I would agree that we look at the agreement to determine what the agreement means. However, a subset of that first really is this a perpetual contract or is it not?
Right, and I think that's really the key issue, right? Whether it's as the district court determined, an indefinite contract or a perpetual contract.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's really the heart of the issue, and that's issue one that you've identified, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And issue two, when you talk about that Northfield has not fully performed the agreement, that issue, that's based on the idea that they had an ongoing and perpetual obligation to pay.
Both to pay and to refrain from annexing land in the township.
Okay.
Correct, Your Honor, without the township's consent.
So that's based on the idea that it's a perpetual contract, right?
It's based on two theories, Your Honor. That's theory number one. Theory number two is it comes out of the Williston and Contracts and out of the only case I can find in the country is one in Maine where one party has fully performed. We believe it's inequitable for the court to allow the other party to be released from their obligation. So even if the contract were indefinite, if one party has fully performed and the other party has accepted that performance, they've got an obligation to fully perform the contract also.
But doesn't that depend on the payments needing to go on in perpetuity? Because the only thing that it says in terms of the payments is that they're yearly.
Correct.
That says nothing about the duration.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think we look at the contract as a whole to determine the duration. Is this perpetual? Is it not? However,
right,
this
right,
is...
Right. So that comes back to whether it's a perpetual contract or not then, right?
Yes, I see where you're going with this. Correct. However, if we determine it's an indefinite contract, mm-hmm. because perhaps it is ambiguous, but we also determined that it would be inequitable for the city to be able to skirt its obligations by terminating the contract, then I think we go back to the language of the contract and the court must determine, does that payment section require payments into perpetuity?
What is your inequitable argument?
Your Honor, essentially we have what I call paid at the door.
What's your theory?
Your Honor, very good question. I cannot cite you a particular theory, and I think it's because, in part, this particular issue has arisen only in one case that I have seen. It is simply not equitable. It's not fair to the township to say you have performed, city, you don't have to. It's been recognized at least by one court in the country.
But that's Maine. It's non-persuasive. It's not in Minnesota.
Your Honor, it is not Minnesota. It's not binding on this court.
Well, I mean, doesn't it seem to be that if there's only one case, this isn't an issue that typically courts rely on to grant equity, particularly when you've got an agreement in place?
I was unable to find a case addressing this issue at all. All of the cases that I, other than the main case, all the cases that I found, Your Honor, dealt with an ongoing annual type business relationship typically. One side performs, one side pays. One side performs, one side pays. This case, the township performed at the beginning. No further performance is required. It is very unusual. I could not find any other case like it.
Well, Northfield could have either made annual payments or just one lump sum payment, though, right? The language is written in the disjunctive with the word or.
Your Honor, the reason I think it could not be one annual payment is the parties contemplated certainly more than one payment, and in fact they put in place a formula to adjust for it from year to year.
Assuming that annual payments were made, though.
Correct, Your Honor. But if the parties intended that only one payment would be made, they wouldn't put in that language.
But the language was written in the disjunctive. They could have made one lump sum payment or made annual payments according to a particular formula.
I guess, Your Honor, that's not the way we read that. We read that agreement saying that the payments that were to be made were to be adjusted annually. To me, it wouldn't make sense to have that adjustment provision in the contract if, in fact, the parties contemplated only one payment.
Okay, and I quickly wanted to go to issue number 3 and 4, because issue 3 seems to be a similar thing. It talks about there being a breach of contract because Northfield failed to make the required annual payments. Again, isn't that based on the fact that, under the assumption that the contract goes into perpetuity and they must continue to make annual payments?
Again, under either theory, or under either the contractual perpetual theory, yes, and under the equity argument that I've advanced.
But issue 2 and issue 3 don't rely on equitable arguments. That's a later argument that's made, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor. But to me, it wraps up, in essence, the whole of the case. Do you find that the city still has an obligation, or does the city no longer have an obligation? And that's really the question. And the obligation doesn't just go to payments. It also goes to the ban, if you will, on annexations in the future without the township's consent. So even if the court were to decide it was just an annual payment, the ban would still be out there. That language says no future annexation without the township's consent. That is very clear language. That should continue on into perpetuity, again, as a perpetual contract. So those two issues are separate from each other and can be decided differently.
Mr. Curry, can I ask, this all presupposes that the main point you've made from the beginning is that the township has fulfilled its consideration or its obligation, meaning allowing for annexation.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is annexation as a matter of law, in fact, a permanent consideration? Can it never be undone, in other words? You can see what I'm getting at is,
sure.
So, for instance, even in the Glacial Plains Cooperative, their end result is the elevator, because it's not in perpetuity, will no longer have to provide grain, even though they might have wanted to, so they end their consideration. How does one, as an alternative way of looking at this, the township end its consideration of annexation? And is that even desired, legally possible, factually or otherwise?
Very good question, Your Honor. Given the current facts as I understand them, I don't believe it's possible, because there is a statute, I want to say it's 414.06. Don't quote me on that .06 part. It's the detachment statute. It allows for land to be detached from a city to a township through a proceeding. I believe the property owner has to petition. But if I recall that statute correctly, it has to find the court or the administrative law judge, Office of Administrative Hearings, has to make a finding that the property is rural or rural residential in nature and not developed for commercial, industrial, or urban purposes, or urban residential purposes. This property, as far as I know, still has a building on it. I don't think that's in the record per se, but it's an industrial property. It could not meet that criteria today. If the building is wiped off the property and it's turned back to farm, could, in theory, somebody come and detach it? You can go through a proceeding and the Office of Administrative Hearings has the authority to do that if that petition meets the statute. So it is possible.
You, as I understand your position, Mr. Curry, you're arguing that this is a perpetual agreement.
Correct.
But you earlier, in response to Judge Reyes, were talking about, you know, a hypothetical that dealt with if it were of an indefinite duration, which is what the district court found here.
Correct.
If this is deemed to be an indefinite duration of a contract, then how has Northfield failed to fully perform?
So Northfield has taken the position to the township that the contract is void, in essence, that it is terminated.
Go ahead. I'm going to wait for you.
Because they have terminated it. So they haven't performed by not making the payments, number one. Right. They have not tried to annex property in the future. In the recent past, we anticipate that will occur in the future. So that's why this was a declaratory judgment action also, declare the rights of the parties. The township wants the contract to be declared still valid and still enforceable, particularly the part about no annexations in the future.
Okay. Do you agree, though, that they have the right, if this is a contract of an indefinite duration, to terminate it with reasonable notice?
That is the law. However, in this case, because the township has fully performed, we don't think that is equitable, and we think this court should hold otherwise.
But so then your argument is, on the contractual legal side, yes, they can terminate the agreement if it's determined to be indefinite, but your argument, your fallback argument then, is that it wouldn't be inequitable to enforce it.
So given our particular facts, we don't believe they should be allowed to terminate, even if it were indefinite. We don't believe that rule...
Well, but didn't you concede that? Because the district court found, one of the district court's findings of fact is that that you weren't contesting the fact... It was undisputed fact that they could terminate it, that they didn't do anything wrong in terms of terminating the agreement.
So our position in the district court was that they did provide us reasonable notice to terminate the contract. We have taken the position in district court and continue to take it here that they should not be allowed to terminate the contract because we have fully performed. So the law allows termination when you of a indefinite contract when you provide reasonable notice. Given the facts of this case, we do not concede that they should be allowed to do that. We have contested that and continue to, given the fact that we have performed.
But that was something that, it seemed like that was something that was conceded in the district court, though. You never disputed that as a material finding, undisputed issue of fact from the district court.
You're talking in the appeal here, Your Honor?
No.
At the lower court?
Yeah.
And perhaps, Your Honor, my understanding of it was in my arguments, in my briefs to the appellate court, in my oral arguments to the appellate court, I argued that, in fact, they should not be allowed to terminate that contract because we have fully performed.
You agreed that you got reasonable notice. That's what you agreed to.
Correct. We agreed we got reasonable notice, but we don't think in this fact situation that that rule should apply, that reasonable notice on an indefinite contract would terminate it. In our particular case, we have fully performed, and we believe it would be inequitable to not allow the city to void the contract or terminate the contract after we've performed and they have not fully performed.
Just to clarify then, is the sole basis upon you believe a distinction from the law such as what Glacial Ridge and perpetuity, simply because unlike in that case and perhaps all the cases that talked about indeterminate versus perpetual, is in all those cases consideration is ongoing by both parties?
Correct.
Here, your client's fully complied, hence that's the distinction. But you haven't found any law, at least in Minnesota, that would...
No law in Minnesota and no law in 48 other states, Your Honor, only Maine, that I've been able to find. Going back to the issue, if I can finish the issue in essence, the city's admission on this, if you look at the brief that they turned in, I think it was page 7 of their brief in response to our motion for summary judgment and at the oral argument, the city took the position that the parties did intend to enter into a perpetual agreement, but the parties just didn't put the right language in the agreement. We think that statement in and of itself is wrong because, again, once the parties have agreed what the intent was. From that point forward, we don't need to look at intent. Minnesota courts have, and in my brief, I cited a number of cases where Minnesota courts have enforced the intent of the parties, the concession of the parties. When one party concedes, the courts have enforced it and have not gone forward with more analysis on that issue.
Right, but the next paragraph, they say, by its own terms, paragraph 3C is limited to the sentence in which it's establishing the no future annexation requirement. There's absolutely nothing in the context of paragraph 3 to suggest it's meant to apply to any other term in the agreement. It cannot be lifted from context and used to establish a term for the entire agreement. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to argue that the entire agreement should run in perpetuity. And their argument is no, it doesn't, to the extent that it is or could be interpreted to run in perpetuity. That only applies to the no future annexation clause.
So, Your Honor, what the city tried to do in that part of their brief was basically to say this particular provision, 3E of the contract, sits in isolation and does not have any bearing on the rest of the contract. That's blatantly disregards contract law in Minnesota, which says...
In what way?
Because we look at the contract as a whole.
You look at the contract as a whole, but just because you have particular language in a particular part of an agreement doesn't necessarily mean it applies to the entire agreement. But what language in 3E says this language applies to the entire agreement?
There's nothing in 3E that does, Your Honor. However, if you look at Glacial Plains, the court drew inferences from the language in there. Similar wasn't exact language. It was language saying the parties will be the exclusive supplier, and applied that to the duration issue, which we would hear. We think it's a logical conclusion.
Well, what they did is they looked at it to determine whether or not that is one reasonable inference that could be made from the agreement.
Correct, Your Honor. I agree.
They didn't apply it to the whole thing.
They did. That was one inference that the court concluded was a reasonable interpretation of the contract.
And they had to go to an inference because there's no explicit...
Correct, Your Honor.
There's nothing explicit here.
Nothing explicit. Okay. But the main holding of Glacial Plains is you don't need those magic words. You look at the contract and draw inferences from it. And I see my time is up.
Thank you,
I will address it again on rebuttal.
Counsel for respondent, you may approach.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Robert Scott, law firm of Flaherty and Hood in St. Paul, and I'm here today representing the city of Northfield. Initially, it must be noted that the appellant in bringing this action is asking courts to do something that the law disfavors, which is to enforce a contract as a perpetual contract. In this case, obviously, the contract at issue is our annexation agreement between Northfield and Waterford Township from 1980. This case is controlled by the Glacial Plains holding of the Supreme Court. It was about exactly 1 year ago that the Supreme Court issued that ruling. There are two fundamental separate issues appellant has to overcome to succeed in its appeal. One deals with the perpetual versus indefinite issue discussed already in appellant's argument. The second is, even if the court were to find that this agreement is unambiguously perpetual, such that it can enforce it even under the Glacial Plains precedent, it still raises important questions of public policy. Can one local government, even legally under Chapter 414, agree to make a perpetual tax reimbursement payment to another local government? That's a secondary issue. The district court didn't reach it because it decided the issue under Glacial Plains. And we agree that Glacial Plains is dispositive.
Counsel, let me ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel in terms of issues 2, 3, and 4 that they raised. Well, first of all, issue 4 seems to be the summary judgment really relates back to the first issue. But in issue 2 and 3, are those dependent on the determination of whether it's indefinite or perpetual? Or let me rephrase that. Are they dependent on the assumption that the agreement is perpetual? And if the agreement is not determined to be perpetual, as the district court found, do we even need to reach issues 2 and 3? Because the district court didn't consider those either.
The district court didn't consider them. As I understand appellant's argument, the way they brought this forward, my understanding is the assumption that this was a perpetual agreement is baked into each of those arguments. In other words, when they argue that if the court finds that this is indefinite, some equitable theory would apply to prevent respondent from terminating this agreement anyway, what they're really doing is restating their argument that respondent had perpetually agreed to make these payments and to perpetually refrain from annexation in the township. It just doesn't make sense if it was an actual indefinite agreement, that there's some breach here or some inequity that would be created by the city exercising its right under an indefinite contract to terminate it. So my opinion is that the assumption or the premise that there was a perpetual obligation created by this contract is baked into the entirety of appellant's arguments.
Okay, thank you.
The Glacial Plains holding, which we think is dispositive, again, it was decided about a year ago by the Supreme Court, and that decision the Supreme Court announced in Minnesota, I think for the first time, that contracts of perpetual duration are disfavored as a matter of public policy. It also announced a rule of construction that any ambiguity in a contract that pertains to duration must be construed against perpetual duration. In this case, we have maintained consistently, and I will restate because it's been alleged that we have somehow admitted otherwise. We have maintained consistently that the joint resolution at issue was ambiguous at best as to its durational terms. It does not clearly and directly establish any intent as to duration as the Glacial Plains Court would require in order for it to be enforced as a perpetual agreement.
Mr. Scott, the language I'm looking at, Glacial Plains, because in that case, because the durational language of the contract is ambiguous, we will construe it against perpetual duration. And if I understand Mr. Curry's argument here is that there is no ambiguity that's indefinite. It's unambiguously perpetual. I guess the question I have, do you agree with that Glacial Ridge analysis? In other words, is it possible to have a contract? Would this be one of those examples where, though it didn't in black and white say this goes in perpetuity, but nevertheless does not have ambiguity as to whether it's indefinite versus in perpetuity?
Yes, we agree that the Glacial Plains holding allows for the possibility that parties can unambiguously create a perpetual obligation that the courts will enforce.
And can that be done without the actual words?
It can be done without the actual words in perpetuity or forever or permanent. That's clear. The Supreme Court said there are no magic words that it's going to impose. What it did say is that the intent has to be clear and unambiguous from the text of the contract itself, looking at the contract as a whole. There are some commonly recognized ways that parties can create a perpetual contract. Not the joint resolution did none of them, but I just want to address, we summarize some of these on pages 14 and 15 of our brief. But in order to make a perpetual agreement, one way to do it is just actually use those words and establish a term for the agreement that is to last into perpetuity or forever. But that's not required. Another way to do it is for the parties to affirmatively restrict either party's ability to terminate. For example, by saying, the agreement shall continue and may not be terminated by either party, may only be terminated by agreement of both parties. Another way to do it is to state that the contract will continue as long as one party satisfactorily performs. And then another way, I'm sure there are others, but these are the ways we've highlighted that courts have enforced perpetual agreements, is to state that the contract will continue so long as certain circumstances exist or a certain condition is satisfied. Again, the joint resolution does none of those things.
So in other words, there's no evergreen clause here?
Correct. There's no, at least the contract that the Supreme Court and Glacial Plains interpreted made an effort to try and define how long the agreement would last in effect. The Supreme Court found that they used conflicting language to do it. They said that it will continue in effect until terminated by both parties, which is one way to create a perpetual agreement. but they use the word indefinitely in trying to create that obligation, which the court found created the ambiguity and required it to be construed against perpetual duration. In this case, the joint resolution didn't even try and do that. It's just silent. It does not ever say the provisions in this agreement are to last in effect for any particular time, whether in perpetuity or indefinitely or a term of years. It just simply didn't address that question.
Mr. Scott, do you agree with Mr. Curry's answer to my question about it, that case, along with most cases we look at, there's an ongoing consideration provided by each party. And in this case, they make the point we've given our consideration. And do you agree with it as a matter of law that it's not possible if the party's consideration mutually ended, okay, the annexation ends because the payment ends?
I agree with opposing counsel's answer about it, the way in which an annexation could be undone, essentially, where property could be detached from a city. I disagree that the parties clearly intended to establish perpetual obligations. And even if the court were to find that language that the appellants rely on so heavily did create unambiguously a perpetual obligation, at least regard to the no annexation provision, our position is still that that's unenforceable as contrary to statute, and we've addressed that in a different section in our brief. But bringing it back to the glacial plains analysis, there are, and I need to address the way counsel for appellants has characterized the glacial plains holding, and I think it's just incorrect. Appellants counsel has argued that the glacial plains holding stands for the proposition that the court will draw inferences and look at different provisions and kind of piece together the party's intent. And if it can determine that there's evidence of perpetual intent, it will enforce it that way. To the contrary, the language the Supreme Court used is important. Page 237 of its holding, I think, quoted this at page 13 of our brief. The Supreme Court says, after considering what is really, when you look at it, much stronger evidence of perpetual intent in that contract, it said, yet any conclusion that the contract was intended to be one of perpetual duration must rely on some level of inference. Nowhere is such an intent clearly and directly expressed. In this case, in order to rule for appellants and enforce this contract as a perpetual contract, the court needs to draw a number of inferences, which is impermissible under the glacial plains holding. The first thing the court has to infer is that the no future annexation provision actually means no future annexations forever, perpetually, permanently. That durational term was not supplied in the language, even the language that appellant relies on in paragraph 3E, the no future annexation language. The second inference the court would have to draw is that that provision has any application to any other provision in the agreement, when there's absolutely no suggestion, no evidence of any intent for that to be the case. Third, the court would have to infer, again impermissibly, that the no future annexation provision somehow trumps conflicting language in this joint resolution. And when I talk about conflicting language, if you're trying to look at this agreement and glean from it what the parties intended for its duration to be, the recitals to the agreement are important. And if you look, I believe it's paragraph 3 on page 1 of the joint resolution, it's clearly orienting this agreement towards facilitating a single annexation, one-time boundary adjustment where 20 acres would come into the city. It says, it will be beneficial, the joint resolution will be beneficial from the standpoint of orderly transition of the form of government within the area to be annexed, as well as providing the guidelines under which this annexation is to take place. It's possible for parties to reach long-term annexation agreements under which multiple annexations can occur. Obviously, that's not what this agreement did. This is oriented toward a one-moment-in-time boundary adjustment. And most of the obligations it creates are obligations that can be satisfied by a single performance, such as rezoning, extension of utilities to the annexed area, establishing screening between the newly annexed area and the rest of the township, that are satisfied once they're performed, or at best are indefinitely imposed for some period of time, but again, the joint resolution makes no attempt to define that time. For all those reasons, Your Honor, we think that this agreement is ambiguous as to duration. Glacial Plains requires the court to affirm the district court and rule that it is, construe it against perpetual duration. A quick note on the termination. We didn't spend much time addressing this point, but at footnote 6 on page 12 of our brief, we've identified exactly where we had argued that the city had reasonably terminated this contract in the event it's found to be indefinite. That point had never been contested below. I think in this oral argument is the first time appellant has ever suggested that if this was not a perpetual contract, it was reasonably terminated by the city. Finally, as I've argued, even if the court finds, which I don't think it can, but even if the court were to find that this was unambiguously a perpetual agreement, it still violates statute and public policy and can't be enforced for that reason. And a quick note on that point, this is a unique provision, especially the tax reimbursement provision. At the time this agreement was entered into, there was no legal authority for the parties to, or for the city to make a tax reimbursement payment. That wasn't something that was allowed under Chapter 414. And we know that because the parties went and got special legislation for it. The interesting thing is the special legislation was approved the following year after the annexation had taken place. By the time the special legislation took effect, the legislature had already passed and the law had taken effect, a general law that allowed all cities in the state to make tax reimbursement payments, but which imposed a 6-year maximum duration. Our position is that while the general law was not by its terms retroactive, it nevertheless applies to this case because the parties essentially ratified their agreement when they approved the special legislation after the general law 414.036 was adopted in 1981.
Am I correct that the first tax payment came after the effective date of the legislation?
I'm not sure if that was a matter of record, but I believe that is correct. And finally, I'm running out of time, but the last point is that for similar reasons, the provision in paragraph 3E, the no future annexation provision, that violated 414.0325 because it established a term and condition for annexation without properly designating it as required by statute in that agreement. With that, my time is up, and I would request respectfully that this court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. And Mr. Scott, Mr. Curry, you may respond if you wish.
Thank you, Your Honor. The township agrees that the Glacial Plains Court is the most applicable case here, the Glacial Plains case. If we look at that case, the court held that particular contract in Glacial Plains was ambiguous. In order for it to be ambiguous, the court held that it must be subject to two or more reasonable interpretations. The court goes through and establishes one of those reasonable interpretations is the Glacial Plains contract is perpetual. And it bases that on, in part, on the language that says one party will be the exclusive supplier of grain to the other party. It then goes on, as Mr. Scott had noted, to find that they use the word indefinite in talking about the contract, and the court says you can't reconcile the indefinite provision, which can reasonably be interpreted to mean it's an indefinite contract, with the other provision, which you could reasonably interpret to mean it's a perpetual contract. The point of that is the court drew inferences from that language and said, yes, that is enough. The part about one party supplying the other party with grain, that is enough to say that this could be a perpetual contract. Our situation is similar. We have the language that says no future annexation. That is an absolute. It doesn't say no future annexation for 5 years. It doesn't say no future annexation for 20 years. It says
right.
No future
I think that's
annexation.
Part of the problem, though. There's no durational limit. It just says no future annexation.
Correct, Your Honor. It does say no future annexation.
And furthermore, in terms of two reasonable interpretations, the district court already supplied two different reasonable interpretations in its decision.
Its decision required that the court add words to those key operative words, no future annexation. The court added six words or so that said, through the life of this agreement. The parties didn't add that.
Right, but when you look at this agreement, you look at this language, you have to apply it to the terms of this agreement, which is what you're trying to do anyway, to say that it applies to the entire agreement, making it perpetual.
So even if it didn't apply to the entire agreement, that provision, no future annexation, would still have to be a perpetual obligation.
Why?
On part of the city.
Why? If the agreement ends, all the terms of the agreement end, unless you have a specific clause with an agreement saying that that terms of the agreement are, I'm forgetting the term, but you can excise basically one section. In other words, even if this agreement is terminated, this provision shall still remain. There's no language saying that this language is going to remain even if the agreement is found to be unenforceable or is terminated.
So, Your Honor, if you look at the Glacial Plains case, it determined that the duration of the contract could be either perpetual or indefinite based on the language, none of which said, we hereby decree this contract to be
right.
X period of time.
Actually, I remember what it's called now, a severability clause. There's no severability provision here saying that even if the rest of the agreement is either found unenforceable or if the rest of the agreement is terminated, that this provision shall remain. In order to be able to enforce any particular provision and let it continue on after the life of the agreement, there has to be some type of severability clause to allow that provision. And there's nothing here. So either the whole contract falls or continues as one. That's a simple matter of contract interpretation.
And I think if we look at Glacial Plains, what Glacial Plains tells us is to determine the duration of the contract, we look at the language that the parties used. And we put that language to effect. And if we hold out that the no future annexation in isolation, and we say that that is a standalone provision, it doesn't make sense that we would have a contract and we take this provision and we set it on the shelf independent of everything else in the contract. So we look at the contract as a whole, and the question is there anything in that contract which contradicts that language, which is an absolute, no future annexation? And that's where I think the district court erred. There is nothing in that contract which says it's going to terminate earlier.
If the township has concerns about future efforts to annex, you know, its land, the township is not without other remedies or other ways of precluding that. I mean, it seems to me what the township, I originally viewed this as a dispute over the tax payments, but if the focus is more on the annexation, it strikes me that the township would have other ways of fighting any effort to take more property.
So in essence, we would have to go through a hearing, mm-hmm. of which the township doesn't know the outcome.
Right.
And which very well could deprive the township of the no future annexation provision, which we believe is still in force. So if we're deprived of that, mm-hmm. that really is contrary to the agreement. And that, to me, is why this is a perpetual contract. If any annexation occurs, then it runs contrary to that particular provision, and that does not bode with the whole idea of we look at the contract as a whole and we enforce its provisions. Clearly, we would not be enforcing that provision.
Right, so, but how do you, it seems like kind of almost a goodwill, hey, you know, we agreed to this annexation, but in the future, it'd be great if you let us in on those discussions and let us know beforehand before you attempt to do this again. I mean, the whole agreement is about this particular annexation. That provision seems to go above and beyond the terms of this agreement.
The parties negotiated, in essence, a deal. You take this piece of property, but you do not take any others without our consent in the future. That's forever. That is a perpetual term in and of itself. There was also the tax provision, which we believe was annual. But even if this court decides that's tax provision was not to be a perpetual, the no future annexation provision can't be breached without, let me rephrase it, you can't have an annexation occur without breaching the very clear term there, no future annexation. That, we think, is dispositive of this particular issue. With that, I see my time is up, Your Honor. We would respectfully request the court reverse the district court, grant appellant's motion for summary judgment, remand the matter back to the district court for a damage determination. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your statements today and your briefing as well. We'll take the matter under advisement. This ends our oral calendar. We have some non-oral matters we will preside over now in conference. Have a good day.